This is the Greenville Cub Scouts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGSC, Accra, Catskill, and Hudson.
Very good. Meow.
We recommend this station.
Turn out for a special performance from Leah Bertucci, Sunday, September 18th at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Bertucci is performing on electronics, voice samples, and multi-channel radio using four low-range FM transmitters provided from Wavefarm and used to send audio throughout the performance to radios installed within the labyrinth walls of Opus 40 to create a spatialized sonic gesture. Audience members are urged to circulate among the Opus 40 grounds to hear, to make their own live mix of the performance. Bertucci is working with Ben Vita, Zach Layton, and Victoria Keddy on the project. It's Sunday, September 18th, from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Patricia Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that Jen Metzger will be the Democratic candidate for Ulster County Executive in the upcoming special election in November. Metzger, a former state senator, received 64.4% of the weighted vote at the Democratic Committee Convention on September 17th. Ulster County Comptroller March Gallagher received 29.7% of the vote, while Deputy County Executive Mark Ryder came in third with 6%. Metzger was nominated by Sheriff Juan Figueroa, who called her a, quote, true leader, unquote, with a talent for, quote, bringing people together and working with others, unquote. Metzger served on the Rosendale Town Board before she was elected to the State Senate in 2018. In 2020, she was defeated by Republican Michael Martucci. She was appointed in 2022 to the Ulster County Land Bank and to the state's Cannabis Control Board. William J. Kemble is reporting for the Daily Freeman that Republican town of Ulster Supervisor James Quigley will face off against Metzger in the race for county executive. Quigley said he was chosen by Republican and Conservative Party leaders in private sessions during the past week. He said the decision came after realizing that some of the county's largest problems should be addressed by someone who has a track record of working cooperatively with people who have significantly varied environmental, economic, and political views. Quigley has been town supervisor since 2010 after running unsuccessfully in 2008 for Ulster County Comptroller. He was a Coleman Catholic High School graduate who worked in New York City as a partner in a real estate investment firm and then returned to put that experience to work resolving Ulster town debt problems. Quigley said the idea of having a county executive's position decided at the polls without a Republican challenger was abhorrent. Quote, for too long, the office of county executive has been viewed as a birthright and used as a stepping stone for higher office, unquote, Quigley said. Quote, with the support of Ulster County voters, those days will end under my watch, unquote. The special election on November 8th is to fill the unexpired term of Pat Ryan, who was elected to the 19th Congressional District on August 23rd. Ryan resigned as county executive on September 9th. The special election for county executive is taking place on the same date as the general election. The winner will serve through the end of 2023. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Heather Bellow reports in the Berkshire Eagle that officials in Great Barrington are discussing renaming Squaw Road. Last week, the federal government announced that nearly 650 sites in the U.S. that formerly bore the word Squaw have been renamed. That includes the former Squaw Peak on Monument Mountain near Stockbridge, which was changed last year to Pescawasso Peak. The Squaw Swamp in Rensselaer County was renamed Black Swamp. The word Squaw is considered an offensive slur. Great Barrington Town Manager Mark Pruhinsky said residents of 17 out of 18 households along the road met this summer about the name change, and the select board will discuss the issue on October 3rd. Pruhinsky said in an email, and I quote, "I think we'll be ready to move forward with a decision very soon now," end quote. In January, somebody shared the road sign for Squaw Road from its post. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Ted Renssnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors September 14th approved a resolution in opposition to lowering the state's overtime threshold for farm laborers. The State Farm Laborers Wage Board has recommended to State Department of Labor Commissioner Roberta Reardon that the minimum be decreased from 60 to 40 hours per week 10 years from now. That would pay farm workers the same way that grocery workers and other employees are paid. Reardon has until October 21st to make a decision on the proposal. According to the resolution approved by supervisors, farmers, quote, face a tremendous number of challenges outside of their control, including obtaining labor, climate change, land management policies, foreign market competition, and livestock and crop disease, unquote. The resolution argues that local farmers will not be able to handle the increased cost they believe a lower overtime minimum would create. Board Minority Leader Trista Haltling of New Lebanon expressed reservations about the initial draft of the resolution and wanted to table it. She suggested holding a special meeting to hear from local farmers and farm workers. Chatham Town Supervisor Donnell Collins supported Haltling's motion to table the resolution, saying the county should support the farm labor workforce. Haltling subsequently made a motion to amend the proposed resolution to state the board acknowledges the overtime changes would harm farmers in Columbia County, and the board would, quote, commit to a process of hearing from all involved parties to come up with alternative solutions, unquote. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said discussions with local farmers led to the introduction of the resolution. Quote, "We had heard from people in the agriculture business that felt it was going to hurt farms," unquote, Morrell said. Quote, "We felt that we would do a resolution prior to the governor signing it to let her know how we feel," unquote. He said nothing about meeting with farm workers who are paid less than all other employees in the state. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Alex Gault reports for the Post Star that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik is one of 86 co-sponsors of the House version of the bill from South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham to ban most abortions after 15 weeks nationwide. While local politicians have been promising abortion rights are safe in this state, the, and I quote, "Protecting Pain-Capable Unborn Children from Late-Term Abortions Act," end quote, if passed, would override state laws and ban abortions in New York. Current New York law permits abortions for viable pregnancies up to 24 weeks of age, although allows the medical procedure later if the health of the mother or fetus is at risk. A statement from Stefanik's advisor, Alex DeGrasse, said, and I quote, "Congresswoman Stefanik, a young mother, is pro-life with exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. She strongly opposes taxpayer funding for abortions and supports the Hyde Amendment. Her constituents are proud of her long pro-life record throughout her time in Congress," end quote. The Hyde Amendment passed in Congress in 1977, banning federal funding for abortion except when the mother's life is in danger and can be saved with the procedure. Matt Costelli, running against Stefanik in the 21st Congressional District that will include Rensselaer County, disagrees. He said, and I quote, "Elise Stefanik has put a target on the back of every woman in NY21 and threatens the health of millions of American women by taking away their freedoms. She continues to demonstrate that she is willing to sell out anyone for her own benefit, willing to deprive women of the right to make decisions about their own bodies, willing to threaten the lives of women, all to advance her own career. This dangerous and unconstitutional ban makes it clear that Elise Stefanik is unfit for leadership and wholly unfit to represent of New York 21, end quote. Read more about this story in the Post Star.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the State Department of Health and Centers for Disease Control has tested 2 weeks of sample wastewater taken from Kingston and New Paltz, and the results were negative for poliovirus. The testing will now continue to be a regular part of wastewater surveillance in Kingston and New Paltz. Quote, polio is preventable through safe and effective vaccination, and I strongly encourage all residents who are not vaccinated for polio to call their doctor and get vaccinated without delay, unquote, said Acting Ulster County Executive Johanna Contreras. County Health Commissioner Dr. Carol Smith said that, quote, while the polio testing results for Ulster County are negative, it doesn't mean that our community is immune from polio in the long term. Getting all your children vaccinated is the best and only way to protect them from this serious disease, unquote. She urged every person to check with their physician's office to make sure that everyone in the family is up to date with polio and all other essential vaccinations. In New York State, wastewater is now being tested for the presence of the virus that causes polio. Unvaccinated residents or those not up to date with immunizations who live, work, go to school in, or visit Rockland County, Orange County, Sullivan County, New York City, and Nassau County are at the highest risk of contracting the paralytic disease. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Chris Bragg reports in the Times Union that the state of California paid 45% less than New York for the same COVID-19 test supplied by a donor to Governor Kathy Hochul. New York spent $637 million on the test from the New Jersey-based distributor Digital Gadgets, LLC. That is $286 million more than the price California was charged. Digital Gadgets, LLC is a company owned by a New York City family that has donated nearly $300,000 to Hochul's campaign. California bought the test directly from the manufacturer at $6.75 per test, while New York paid the distributor $12.25 per test. New York bought the test 3 weeks earlier than California during a shortage of tests that may explain some of the price disparity. Bill Hammond, Senior Fellow for Health Policy at the Empire Center for Public Policy, said, and I quote, "The price is just way off the map, and we still haven't heard anything close to a convincing explanation for why the price was so high and why the Hochul administration not only accepted a price that was so high, but made this their primary supplier. If the tests were being sold to another state at the same price, at a better price, New York should have been able to get something closer to that price, even if the state was snapping up the last tests available," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Monday, September 19th. We start off each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says the lowest price for a gallon of gas is $3.66 at the Citgo in South Caro. Then we look at the air quality forecast, and it's twice as worse as on Sunday. It's up to 40, which is on the high end of the good range. Then we look at the UV index, which is a 5 in the moderate range. And the National Weather Service in Albany says that Monday there's a 60% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the afternoon with a high of 74 and a southwest wind spinning local windmills 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Monday night, again, a 60% chance of showers. mostly cloudy skies, a low around 59, and a west wind around 5 miles per hour after midnight. Tuesday, there is a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 71, a northwest wind 5 to 8 miles per hour, and a low around 54. Wednesday, there's a 30% chance of rain again, mostly after 2 p.m., with sunny skies forecast otherwise, with a high of 75 and a low around 58. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the air on 90.7 FM on Monday, September 19th, including you can hop on the Afrosonic Taxi at 10 a.m. with new music from Ina Maja, Theus Daria, and King Cora, among others. Then Brendan Donegan is playing favorites live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street at 11 a.m. At 4 p.m., we are live from Western Massachusetts, where Kieran Riley beams in on the WGXC Afternoon Show. At 8 p.m., we're live from Acre with J.D. Eisman and his show The Spell, with futuristic soul, cosmic leaning roll, and lost classics, and more. And then at 10 p.m., we're live from Catskill with Nancy Giles and Carmen Borgia from the Worthy Soundworks studio in Catskill. A variety show featuring stand-up comedy, music, and more. On the radio until midnight at 90.7 FM WGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On October 28th, two incredible performers come to the Hudson Valley. Meg Baird and Chris Forsyth are both performing at Tubby's in Kingston. And they're both playing with the same band, Douglas McCombs from Tortoise and 11th Dream Day on bass, Ryan Jewell, who plays with Riley Walker and many others, on drums, and Charlie Soffley from Heron Oblivion on guitar will be backing both Meg Baird from Espers and Chris Forsyth. Performance is October 28th from 8 to 11 p.m. at Tubby's in Kingston. You can find out more about this show and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music, plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles, alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Monday, September 19th. We start off each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says the lowest price for a gallon of gas is $3.66 at the Citgo in South Caro. Then we look at the air quality forecast, and it's twice as worse as on Sunday. It's up to 40, which is on the high end of the good range. Then we look at the UV index, which is a 5 in the moderate range. And the National Weather Service in Albany says that Monday there's a 60% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the afternoon with a high of 74 and a southwest wind spinning local windmills 6 miles per hour in the afternoon. Monday night, again, a 60% chance of showers, mostly cloudy skies, a low around 59 and a west wind around 5 miles per hour after midnight. Tuesday, there is a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 71, a northwest wind 5 to 8 miles per hour, and a low around 54. Wednesday, there's a 30% chance of rain again, mostly after 2 p.m., with sunny skies forecast otherwise, with a high of 75 and a low around 58. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Arthur and Karen of Hoover, Alabama. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Yep, you're listening to WGXC 90.7. And when I'm coming home from the turnip picking, I like to listen to the Battlefield Earth program. Boy, that guy's got some sensibility about him, doesn't he? Every Tuesday nights at 9:30. It's crazy out there.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
That's Claverack from Sebado member Eric Gaffney from a 1999 album. And he apparently spent time in Columbia County because this other song on that album, Brilliant Concert Numbers, is called Hudson River Landing.
Summer. Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. Mourners outside Westminster Hall, where Queen Elizabeth is lying in state. World leaders will gather in London today for her funeral. President Joe Biden is scheduled to meet with UK Prime Minister Liz Truss later this week at the UN General Assembly. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is defending his decision to fly Venezuelan migrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. Critics say deceiving the migrants to get them on the planes for the stunt may have actually been illegal. But DeSantis is blaming the administration's immigration policy.
This is a massive policy failure by the president.
Former President Donald Trump campaigned in Youngstown, Ohio, Saturday for Senate contender J.D. Vance and Ohio Representative Jim Jordan.
If you want to continue this national catastrophe, vote for the radical left Democrats. Do it. Go ahead. You won't have a country left.
Rail workers are set to vote on a White House brokered deal between unions and railroad companies this week. If they fail to ratify the new contract, more than 100,000 workers could still go on strike. But Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says the agreement addresses their major concerns.
Because of the way railroad workers are scheduled, it can be very difficult for them to get time off, even unpaid time off sometimes when they need it. That was a major issue at the table and one that was resolved.
A New York Times Siena College poll shows more Latinos, especially younger males, are moving away from the Democratic Party. More than a third of Hispanic voters agree more with the GOP on crime and policing. And President of Bienvenido U.S., Abraham Enriquez, says they're most focused on the cost of living.
Inflation, as it has reached a 40-year high, has really crushed Hispanic budgets across the country.
Still, close to 60% plan to vote for Democrats this fall, compared with a third who plan to vote Republican. South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says Americans would accept a national abortion ban at 15 weeks. His bill to put one in place has drawn fire, but the Conservative Center for Urban Renewal and Education has come out in favor. The group's president, Star Parker, says abortion advocacy groups are taking responsibility and dignity away from black and brown communities.
And they force taxpayers to give them money so that they can then continue with aborting mostly those that are black and brown.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported earlier this summer on the passage of a no-excuse mail-in voting law in Delaware. A Delaware state court judge struck down the law as contrary to the state constitution. Delaware had passed SB 320 in June, which would allow voters to vote by mail without having to give an excuse. But the Delaware Constitution currently allows for the use of an absentee only when the voter is outside the state, in the armed forces, unable to vote due to job requirements, sick or disabled, on vacation, unable for religious reasons, or in government service outside the country. Town Square Live and Democracy Docket report that Republican members of the legislature sued, and Chancery Court Vice Chancellor Nathan Cook ruled that despite Delaware's tradition of a robust voter participation, the state constitution left him no choice but to issue an injunction on the law. Cook also noted in his ruling that, quote, "It bears repeating that the express purpose of election laws in this state is to provide for free and equal elections where Delawareans have an unfettered right to vote, one of the most fundamental of our rights." He went on to suggest that the Delaware Supreme Court may want to reconsider past decisions on mail-in voting. Past attempts at bills changing the state constitution to allow no-excuse mail-in voting have failed. To read more about the decision and groups taking action, see links at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
This is Liv Kara's Stuyvesant.
Coming
high. And we climb on tower to watch the train roll by. Days turn into nights here, and nights they pin you down. So set the woods on fire and drink till the moon goes down. For the trees are ripe with flowers and the grass is fresh and new. Oh, I'd never go Stuyvesant if it's not for you.
Here is this week's environmental news from WGXC. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more about these stories and others.
Marie J. French reports at Politico how efforts to build offshore wind turbines at the Port of Coymans and Port of Albany are being opposed by environmentalists. The Port of Coymans recently has been a maritime hub for construction debris from New York City. So it would seem environmentalists would support a shift to building offshore wind turbines. But environmentalists see the expansion of the ports as risky to the health of the Hudson River. Barbara Heinzen, a Coymans resident, said, and I quote, "We've had 20 years of creeping expansion," end quote. The 125-acre Port of Coymans is about 15 miles south of Albany, owned by Carver Companies, recently added an industrial park to the dismay of some neighbors. The Carver Company's businesses have been fined several times by the DEC for environmental violations, including a 2018 fine for illegally stored road salt at the port. The current expansion plans there would require dredging to increase the depth of the Hudson River and allow bigger ships to load and unload.
That dredging will eliminate the potential habitat for the endangered sturgeon in the Hudson River. Carver wants to mitigate that loss by funding 1.8 acres of habitat restoration at the Skodak Island State Park across the river. On August 8th, the Department of Environmental Conservation concluded that all negative environmental impacts had been minimized and mitigated, and I quote, to the maximum extent practicable, end quote. At the Port of Albany, the complaints are about the number of trees cut down for the port's expansion. John Lipscomb, Riverkeeper's boat captain, said, and I quote, "We seem to compromise our values. It's not about wind. It's not about politically popular projects," end quote. Read more about this story at Politico. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that on September 12th, Governor Kathy Hochul's office announced that the New York Power Authority was giving an Israeli firm a $1 million grant to develop fast-charging battery capabilities for electric vehicles. To phase out gas-fueled vehicles in New York, the state will need to have many fast-charging stations for cars and trucks throughout the state. Hochul said, and I quote, "Through key strategic partnerships, New York is driving the advancement of cutting-edge clean energy technologies that will have a global impact in the fight against climate change. New York's collaboration with the State of Israel, a hub for innovative clean energy technologies, will deliver forward-thinking solutions that will strengthen New York's EV infrastructure," end quote. While California has mandated that no fossil fuel-powered cars will be sold after 2035, New York has yet to announce a similar mandate. Read the full story at New York State of Politics. Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union that the General Electric Company has agreed to conduct a study of possible PCB and other contaminations in the lower Hudson River from the Troy Dam to New York Harbor. The agreement was announced by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency on September 13th. New York parties, led by the Department of Environmental Commissioner Basil Sagos, as well as the Hudson Riverkeeper Group, have maintained that more studies, as well as additional dredging, will likely have to be done. GE has taken the position that its dredging was completed in 2015 when, following an agreement with the EPA, they removed approximately 2.5 million cubic yards of PCB-laden sediment from a 40-mile stretch of the river between Fort Edward and Troy. The contamination dates from the 1940s to the 1970s, when GE regularly discharged PCBs into the Hudson from its capacitor plants in Fort Edward and Hudson Falls. While it was legal to do so at the time, the dumping sparked worries about pollution, since PCB is now considered a probable carcinogen. Under the new agreement, GE will develop a plan for, and I quote, "extensive water, sediment, and fish sampling between the Troy Dam and the mouth of the Hudson Harbor," end quote. The organization will look for evidence of PCBs and other contaminants as well. According to the EPA, new data is needed to determine the best path forward. This is being done in advance of what could be formal studies that could come before a cleanup plan. EPA Regional Administrator Lisa Garcia said in a statement, and I quote, "The information will help us determine whether and how to prioritize investigations into each portion of the lower Hudson and how to best address contamination," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the New York State Department of Public Service will hold a series of public meetings on a proposed New York State Electric and Gas Corporation rate hike. NYSEG, which provides electric services to portions of Greene and Columbia County, has requested the PSC to approve changes to annual electric and natural gas delivery rate. NYSEG is proposing to increase its electric delivery revenue by approximately $274 million, a 31% hike in base delivery revenues for the company. If approved, the rate increases would take effect on May 1, 2023. The Department of Public Service will hold a series of virtual public statement hearings on the rate hikes beginning September 15th, with hearings scheduled at 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. State residents are able to provide their comments to the PSC about rate changes. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said the county is encouraging NYSEG customers to express their opinions about the rate changes to the state agency. Groden said, and I quote,
I think when people see those numbers, they're going to say, what? Why are these things going up so much? I don't know if there's a correlation between the fact that we're pushing to more green energy, which is more expensive. There's a benefit to green energy, but now we're going to agree to pay 50% more because we're going to use solar, end quote. Additional virtual Department of Public Service hearings will take place on September 28th and October 18th at 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. each day. Last week, National Grid announced its residential natural gas customers should expect to pay an estimated $263 more on their heating bills beginning in November and continuing through the end of March. National Grid electric customers will pay approximately 22% more than last winter. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup that Central Hudson Gas and Electric is once more warning customers to prepare for higher energy supply prices as electric and natural gas prices increase again. This the company announced on September 13th. The residential price for electric supply will increase from $8.32 per kilowatt hour in August to $13.06 per kilowatt hour as of September 13th. Natural gas prices that went into effect on September 1st also increased from 87.1 cents per 100 cubic feet in August to 97.8 cents per 100 cubic feet. According to Central Hudson, the utility purchases electricity and gas from, and I quote, third-party suppliers on behalf of customers. These costs are not marked up, and Central Hudson does not profit for them, meaning customers pay the same rates as Central Hudson for the energy they use, end quote. Central Hudson says several international, national, and regional factors are contributing to this market volatility. For instance, inflation is plaguing the entire planet since the pandemic, and Russia's invasion of Ukraine has wreaked havoc on energy markets. Read the full story at Porcupine Soup.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Lights Out Norlite, the community group working to shut down the Norlite hazardous waste and aggregate facility in Cohoes, New York, held a community briefing for local residents to update them on their efforts on September 15th. We hear first from local leader Joe Ritchie, a lifelong resident of the Saratoga Sites Housing Project across the tracks of Norlite, that the city of Cohoes is purchasing from HUD and then demolishing after moving the 70 tenants out. He is followed by a longtime resident, Shamari Stephen, who is in the process of buying a house in the area, followed by former regional EPA administrator Judith Hank.
I lived here my entire life in Cohoes. I still live in Cohoes. And just like that little kid, when I was younger, I would see clouds of dust coming towards me. I actually remember it one day at the summer day, and I was looking right over here between these two buildings, and I just saw this cloud of dust, and I just said, what is that? And I said to myself, because I thought it was nothing harmful, if I knew it was little microscopic glass fragments like the state knew forever, I would have maybe told my mom something dangerous was happening because I was maybe 10 years old. I also remember another experience. There's a creek actually that runs right along from Norlite and down here and throughout. And I used to go in there with my friends and we'd play, find turtles and find all these little fun stuff. My friend used to have like a zoo in their house. They had like reptiles, turtles, and fish, and all this other animals. And we'd catch these different animals. And it was fun to do. And I remember one day, I was in the creek over there, and I saw like this weird coloration in the pool. It was like green and orange and all these different colors. And like the main pool there was like burlap sacks too in the bottom of the pool. And I was like, what is that stuff? I was a little bit older. I said, maybe it's from these people just throwing their trash away or whatever. You know, very innocent. And it's kind of what's happening here to these children that are just being kids. Innocent children are being exposed to this really toxic facility. Cancerous, deadly facility. I mean, we have the records now to say all of the black dust that goes on people's cars the snow that children play in at wintertime that becomes black. It's from Norlite. We know this.
You know, I remember when we first moved in that, you know, I would always see this black dust on our windowsills. The windows are pretty bad, so it would come into the house, too. You would see it. It's on every windowsill, inside, outside. And I kind of just chalked it up to living off of 25th Street. You know, it's just the trucks going by. And then you go down this road to Cohoes, you know, go to Substitute. What's that? It's a chemical plant. And I was like, that's what's going on. You know, it you don't know until you know. And then you can't forget. You got to do something. And I don't want to just go live somewhere else. I want to fix what we have now because it's all connected. And like we're saying, the wind takes it.
And I want to introduce my good friend, Judith Hank, local resident and also a big powerhouse in the environmental policy world.
No one's ever called me a powerhouse. Thanks, Joe. It's so nice to see everyone in person. Thank you for coming out. Because there are a couple of really important things I want to make sure everyone understands. So the Norlite hazardous waste incinerator is running on expired permits. The permits expired a year and a half ago. So imagine if we were driving our jalopy cars on the road and we got pulled over and our inspection expired and our license expired, we would get pretty big tickets. Instead, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation said there's nothing they can do. You have to change the law if you want them to stop operating on expired permits, and then they do nothing to change the law. So they're working on old permits. And this has been a problem for decades, over 30 years. I went back and looked at some of the files, and it's amazing what the DEC has documented since the early 80s. Okay, that's 40 years ago. And the problems, I think, are just getting worse. And I tallied up, I just went back 30 years, a mere 30 years, and I tallied up all of the fines, all slaps on the wrist, totaling $727,000. Just, you know, nothing. It's just cost of doing business for Norlite. So the problem has persisted. The Sokols have been working on it. Other community people have been working on it. I think the issue really got animated when we learned in a very roundabout way that Norlite was burning toxic firefighter foam at this facility, 2.1 million pounds and also 5 million gallons of water that contained PFAS chemicals. These are forever chemicals. They damage our kidneys, our thyroid, our reproductive system. And no one told the residents or the local governments that this additional toxic material was being burned. And it wasn't until this group got together and put a spotlight on it that it stopped. And it stopped because my colleague at Bennington College, David Bond, did some soil sampling and documented the presence of PFAS in the soil, which the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation instantly dismissed. They did their own studies using the same protocol and found similar problems, but never really corrected the record. But it was a law that was adopted by the Cohoes City Council, then the Albany County Legislature, and then the New York State Legislature. All three bodies acted to stop the PFAS burning. Otherwise, that would continue today. This came from 30 states and mostly from the U.S. Department of Defense. Very, very toxic firefighting foam. Here's another thing I want everyone to understand, because on one hand, people think this is really complicated. I'm just going to show up and support the efforts, but we all need to understand this so we can all speak out. When I worked at the EPA, we regulated coal plants, for instance. And it wasn't easy, but it was easier than this, because every day the power plant burned coal. It was the same thing, sometimes different amounts. So you knew what kind of air pollution controls to put on the stacks, You knew what was going to show up with the ash. And you had, you know, you had a fighting chance of trying to minimize the pollution. And the Clean Air Act says you should never release more, like you're supposed to reduce the air emissions by 99.9999%. That rarely happens, but that's what the Clean Air Act aspires to. All right, so think about a coal plant. Now think about Norlite. The hazardous waste is different every day. It's coming from hundreds of different locations. So one day there'll be a lot of benzene, another day there'll be a lot of mercury, another day there might be dioxin, and all they have over there is a guy in a room switching dials to deal with the temperature. And the myth is that if you burn hot enough, the toxins will disappear. But we know that's not true, and we certainly saw that with PFAS. So my professional judgment is that it is virtually impossible to regulate Norlite in a way that protects public health, because the waste is different every single day. The DEC does have a monitor on site, but that person doesn't seem to be exercising a lot of independent authority and making sure that health is protected. So we're at a pivotal moment here. Governor Hochul is up for re-election this November. Attorney General Tish James is up for re-election this November. I'm not being partisan in any way. They are the incumbents. Now is the time to call Governor Hochul and Attorney General Tish James and say one thing, and we all have to say this in a united way and clearly. We need Norlite to be shut down. We don't want another modest fine. We don't want them to say they're going to do another dust control plan. They've had 40 years to get their act together. Time is up. They need to be shut down.
This is Mark Dunley for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. 2022 new music from Hitomi Moriwaki. The album's called Subtropic Cosmos, and that was Numbers on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Solar-powered radio for open ears. Here is 2019 music from Wet Tuna, which is Copake's Pat Gubler and Matt Valentine from up in Vermont way. This album is called Water Weird, released in 2019, and this is the first song, Poor Old Interstellar, on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.